can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Boy, oh boy, we got heavyweights. Heavyweights in the house.
I can't believe this. He's actually doing the buttons.
I know.
All I had to do was pull the sound down. Yeah. All I had to do, I pressed a button and it recorded, and then I just pulled the sound down.
Just commending you.
Well, how hard is that? A monkey could do that, mind you.
But why do you get it wrong 9 out of 10 times?
Because I've not been long out of the forest myself. Heavyweights in the house.
In the house.
Euphemistically speaking, clinically, not clinically speaking,
not ethereally speaking.
I'm not sure who to give top billing to here.
The senior member of the team.
So we've got Greg Evans. Welcome again,
very,
Greg.
Very nice. It's
a regular.
It's my monthly, isn't it?
It is your monthly.
Yeah.
Yes. And Craig Willis has joined him from his country manor.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Rural and estate.
He's brought his very charming partner in, who happens to be a woman.
Isn't that different?
Wouldn't matter. I'm just saying, in this day and age, Craig.
John, you are very correct.
That is
you are very correct. These
that's
days.
Right. It could be
worries the daylights out of me when you're correct. But
I'm assuming you never know
what you're up against.
Assuming
you've met Donna.
I'm assuming Donna is a woman, and I'm taking that on face value. She's a very attractive, charming-looking woman, and I don't care if it's politically incorrect to say
well
that.
Well done. Well done.
And we've got Ivan here.
Ivan,
hello.
Well done, Ivan.
Hello, Ivan.
I am completely out of my depth here.
No, we've heard a lot about you, Ivan.
No, that wasn't me from the old days.
Now, first of all, we were chatting vociferously, I think is the word, off air about just touch the minor things about what life's about. And this is football as we speak, because Greg.
Yes.
I was sent by a fan of ours, Paul Murray, who has a program on Sky News.
And an old Epping Boys High graduate, which is where I went to school.
Paul is?
Paul is.
Epping.
Epping in Sydney.
Oh. No, in Sydney.
I thought you said Epping Girls High.
No, I'm being politically correct. Epping Boys High. And Geoffrey Robertson was an old Epping boy. Jack
right?
Newton.
Wow.
Ivor Davies and I were in the same year together.
Goodness.
From Ice House. The alumni list is including Paul Murray.
Well, Paul listens, obviously listens to us, and he's a very good man. Because he sent me in some footage, or meterage, would you say that these days? Still footage?
Yeah, no, footage will do.
He said footage interview, Greg, when you're on the Mike Walsh show in a Melbourne Football Club strip, you had run onto the ground. I think you tripped over the white line,
that's
as it
right.
turned out. and you did a whole lot of routines with Mike Walsh about football, and Paul chortled.
Where would he have got that? Where
I
would
don't
Paul
know,
have found
but he
that?
Sent it to me. He said, you might be interested to show this to your mate. So, Paul, we're sending a shout-out to you about that. And
well, thank you, Paul. I haven't seen that for 40 years, if you care to show it to me.
Well, I'll get it. He did send it to
it's
me.
It's a bit sad, isn't it?
And now, that was the first thing about the Melbourne Football Club, but suddenly embroiled they are in the old new drug scandal. Yeah. A la circa Essendon 10 years ago. Here we go again. What are they trying to cook up here this time? Someone's got their shits.
Yeah, why has Melbourne always seemed to be the one that's always mentioned about it? But we've got a disgruntled doctor. Now, we've got Craig Willis sitting here. He would know the inside of some of
well,
this.
Well, only what I've been hearing.
Why has the doctor come out
now? Well, the doctor was relieved of duties, apparently, some years back. And according to reports, he's not a happy man. And
he had his stethoscope pulled, did he?
Well, according to I think it's Mr. Warner in the Herald Sun, alleging that the good doctors, and not perhaps just him, were masking the results of drug tests that they were doing privately at a clinic in Heidelberg, so that when the player went, by the way, you've had something you shouldn't have, naughty boy, you've just done your hamstring and you're out for 2 weeks, so that they were not subjected to the post-game testing regime run by the... Well, not the AFL, they engage ASADA to conduct those particular tests. I don't know much
about... Is it illegal to lie?
It's like illegal. Well, it's illegal to mask. If you have a masking agent detected, that is just as bad.
Did you say, is it illegal to lie?
Yes.
Well, I would reckon it's illegal to lie in anything, isn't it?
Well,
if you're being asked if you're going to perjure yourself.
God will be your judge on that.
To ASADA or a WADA. No, that's the world, not the World Doping Body.
ASADA is the one that reports to a WADA. Do we need any more acronyms?
Exactly.
So you can't take the drugs and
even a masking agent is regarded as bad as taking the actual, whether it be, and let's just say it's cocaine. But if you take a masking agent... Cocaine is seen as a stimulant, etc. So it is such a complicated web, isn't it?
You
boil it down. But the thing is that this has been an ongoing problem in football at all levels. And why all of a sudden, and the two players in Sydney in the AFLW were caught with an illicit drugs, but they're not subject to the same drugs regime as the men players, was my understanding.
Really?
So I can't work that out. You either play the game.
That's not fair, is it?
Well, all right. We go to racing. This male jockeys and female jockeys quelle différence in terms of what you can do and what you can't do.
Right.
So
it's the
that's French, by the way. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you completely lost me.
So it's the age-old problem of taking drugs that make you play better than you can, as opposed to taking drugs that make you to play to your potential.
Well, right, let me ask you, as a player of great standing, if you rolled your ankle, for instance, in the 10-minute mark of the first quarter, at quarter time you go down to the rooms and the doctor gives you a small injection into the ankle.
A big one.
Okay, a big injection to numb the pain.
Yep.
Is that not performance enhancing?
That's a very good point, because it used to happen all the time in the 60s. They used to stick a needle through the bandages you had and just so that you it would kill the pain. Mm. And so that's the fine line between...
I don't think that's performance enhancing. But and I don't know too much about this, but if a player had some cocaine on Sunday morning at a barbecue and he was playing football the following Saturday... 5-6 days later, would it show up in his system? And I think the answer is yes, six days later. But would that be
performance-enhancing
point? And the answer is no.
It might be at the barbecue.
But that's a different... That's the integrity of the sport, is you shouldn't be taking illicit drugs.
Yes.
That's to do it's with not sponsors in the crowd.
Six days later, is it?
Well, let me turn an interesting point.
Well,
pardon me. At the tennis at the Australian Open, right? ASADA was there at the Australian Open.
I'll give you another crack at that one, Sam.
Pardon me. from the quarterfinals on at the Australian Open, there would be a drug testing officer waiting for the players to come off the court. They would drug test the loser, which I could never quite understand, but they would drug test those that had lost. So obviously they were waiting for when you get to the final, because then if you've won the match, obviously you go on to the semi-finals, and then if you win that, to the final.
Mm.
So it would still be, but then both would be drug tested.
But in the final?
In the final.
Okay.
But you would see the players and the drug testing people. So they had a separate toilet area for them out in the car park, which was years ago. It's probably changed now. So they'd be being followed around by the people from ASADA.
Mm.
You couldn't go anywhere without one of them being with you in case you falsified or...
Did they ever test you?
No. Well, why would they test me?
Being the voiceover man at the
Greg,
tennis.
I'm enhanced enough. You know that.
Extravagant dialogue out on the court.
But you'd
they
finish
say, shit, he's got to be on something. he's actually speaking shit.
Quality.
The only time I ever took cocaine, I remember
this is a frank admission.
Well, wait for it. I remember taking it. I ended up running around the neighbourhood with my underpants over my head. So I don't know if that's performance enhancing or not. No, I joke. I don't joke. But
Greg's got a good point. So the 6 days about the cocaine. Mm. So does that now lead the players to take drugs that only go for 3 days or 2 days in your system? Because
I think the testing is that comprehensive That I'm sure that it wears off.
Oh, but the window is
the window's narrow.
But I think this has come up with as far as drug testing for drivers on the road goes. You know, that they can do a drug test.
How many times? Okay, quick poll. How many times have you been tested for drugs when you're driving?
Never.
Well, no, never.
Once in Mansfield.
Oh.
Outside the,
after you, are they?
Yeah, after the...
They've taken one look at you and said, right, get out the drug testing
stupidest
caravan.
Stupidest arrangement in that I was tested for drink driving, that's negative, right?
Yeah.
But then they said, move forward. So I move forward and they give you this thing on your tongue.
Really?
And I'm driving... The officer said, move forward. So I'm creeping the car forward. They're walking next to the car, waiting for me to hand back the thing, which I did. And they said, this will take a few minutes. I said, that's fine. Rex, in the meantime, is going off his tree in the back.
Your dog.
He's promoting... He loves Victoria Police. And then they said, you're all clear. I said, thank you very much for that. Mm. It's the only time ever I've been tested in... however long I've been on the roads in Victoria.
So they tested you a breath test and then they thought, hang on, there's something
because
quite
he doesn't
not
drink.
Adding up yep. here. We better just test him, move him along to the next station.
But I asked that question of other people. Have you ever been tested for drugs on the road? And I never. And they all say no. So I don't know how much. But because they claim there's more drug testing, more drug positive results than there are for drink driving in Victoria.
And positive. Yeah.
Positives, yeah.
But Ivan, the same thing still applies, doesn't it? So the bloke who's been to the barbecue on Sunday gets tested on Saturday. It's not going to affect his driving.
Yeah.
But it could still show up in his system or hers. Yeah. And bingo, gone.
Mm. Yeah.
Because the industry that I'm previously from, mining, you probably guys may not
know that.
So our workforce would get tested every single day before you go to work.
Yes.
And of course on the first day it's very everyone worries about the first day of turning up to work because what have they had in the previous 7 days off, week on, week off? So there's masking agents, even at the workforce level, that you can take so that you don't record a positive on that first day of work. Then there's also drugs that you can take, which is, meth and things like that, that will only be in your system for 24, 48 hours.
Uh-oh.
So which is... So it's across the community.
You learned all this underground, did you?
I can't understand why anybody would inject that sort of shit into their system.
Before we get off the subject...
Well, whatever you do.
What was that, Craig? No,
I'm sorry, Tish. But why would anybody want to ingest either
drugs?
Drugs.
You're not serious, are you?
Well, this whole podcast...
Three quarters of the world's on drugs. Well, there's got to be something about them. We're the only four people who are not on them.
Well, that's because you've got to pay through the nose for it.
Oh, you're joking.
You might take up smoking again.
It's the biggest industry in the world besides coffee and oil, I think. Oh. The most traded commodity in the world, I think, is coffee. And then oil.
Yeah.
Crude sweet, and then I think drugs, fentanyl. So this gets back to the disgraceful saga about the Essendon Football Club, who were roundly condemned for doing absolutely proven to have done absolutely nothing wrong. It was all innuendo and speculation, ruined lives, ruined careers, with a knee-jerk reaction from AWADA, the world drug body, thought they'll ping a little pissy club at the bottom of a little pissy country and they'll go bang with a big stick while everyone in the European Eastern Bloc were taking drugs for swimming and weightlifting and Olympics and running, and they thought they'll hone in on Essendon, and it was an absolute disgrace and conducted badly by the AFL.
Yes.
Thith I say.
Here endeth the lesson.
Before we get off the subject of the AFL, last Sunday Melbourne and Hawthorn played, it was a Hawthorn home game. Melbourne were victorious, my team, had a very handsome win, 55-point victory. I would like to know, Craig, Sam, because you both have far more knowledge than I, why was the Melbourne theme song only played once after that 55-point victory? And could it be because it was a Hawthorn home game?
How many times do you want the song to be played?
Five, six, seven,
shit, think
ten.
Of the other people who don't continuous. Watch Melbourne and have to listen to...
Do you really think the 5,500 people that turned up to watch that?
Yeah. No.
Fantastic.
No, there was 34,000.
Flag, it's a... How many times do you want that played?
Several. When your team wins, you want to hear it several times.
Think of the other people tuned in watching.
But hang on. It happens at most games. They play the theme many times, well, don't they?
They do.
Just play it once.
I wouldn't say it's a rule, because it's that whole area, that control room, is not run by the MCC. It's run by a company who are employed by the MCC.
Yes. So is that where you sit when you go and do your voiceovers at the MCC?
I have done that on the odd occasion.
Does a bloke push a button to play the theme song?
Yes, they do. He's sitting
right
there.
What if that bloke was a Hawthorne supporter and he thought, I'm only bloody going to play this song once?
But there could have been an on-ground interview going, because it would have been a Foxtel game, I think.
It was.
So there could have been five interviews going on the ground, and they look down on the ground and they say, Sam Newman is interviewing the coach, for instance, and the idea is that they'd like the crowd to try, which you never can when you go to the footy. You never can hear what's actually being said there, because the sound system is so old.
Was it apparent when you were on the on-call, on-court announcer at Tennis Australia and all the Davis Cups and for decades, was it apparent when you were interviewing players that they were on drugs or had been taking drugs or were playing under the influence of drugs? Because Mr. McEnroe, I think, has conceded he took cocaine when he played.
Mr.
Gerolaitis.
Cannot
Mr.
be serious.
Mr. Gerolaitis, I think McEnroe was, don't want to, I think he has conceded that.
The thing is that some of these players are slightly...
Let's hope he has, because we're in trouble if he hasn't.
You would now
You're
call...
You're in trouble.
Well, I thought that was the case.
Ivan and I are just nodding.
Yes. Some of these players, you have to realise, now would be described as being on the spectrum, to be quite honest, and they all have their idiosyncrasies. Nadal is a great example of his not stepping on the lines, placing this... probably out of all those players, Federer is the only one that is not...
Yep.
The rest of them are all a bit, you know, so they have their little ways, but that doesn't exactly mean that they're on a substance can't buy from the chemist, does it?
No, all I was just asking, did you think this man's acting strangely? To my knowledge, no. No, good. So then we're not going to talk about football, because we don't necessarily do that on this show, but we'll just cover the elephant in the room at the minute is Mr. Wright. Mr. Wright belted Mr. Cunningham, apparently, and got the speculation that he got 4 weeks, and then Wayne Carey said if he gets rubbed out for 4 weeks or rubbed out at all, he'll never watch football again. Explain.
Similar to you.
I didn't need that to me not to watch football. but explain what I'm talking about, Ivan.
Oh, this will be good.
How about English?
So the Essendon in English. Yeah, so the Essendon players gone for the ball. There was a
Cunningham,
Sydney player at the ball. He's at the very last minute. Well, this is all subjective. At the very last minute, he's turned his shoulder. He's hit the other player. The other player's gone down. It doesn't look good on camera. So
this
that's
is Wright
what I
and
think.
Cunningham, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
So what do you mean the other player? Cunningham went for the ball, turned his
shoulder.
No,
Peter Wright went for the ball. Cunningham,
Peter Wright went for the ball.
Peter Wright from Essendon went for the ball, hit the other player. The other player's gone down. Cunningham just gone down on the ground. And it wasn't a good look for AFL at that particular time.
Hang on a minute. Who hit who?
Peter Wright from Essendon.
Well, hit Cunningham.
Well, hip and shouldered him.
Well, that's what I said. And you said no. It was the other way around.
Yeah, sorry.
Holy
no,
shit.
Peter, did I say that? No, Peter Wright is the player in question.
I've seen this incident once, and it did not look good.
It didn't look
Beyond
good.
Beyond that, I don't know.
Yes.
So Ivan, he did ask you to speak English.
And how many times?
This ended up with Peter Wright being sprung and getting 4 weeks.
Spy catcher?
Getting sprung? What?
Peter Wright wrote Spy Catcher.
Did he?
Oh.
Well,
he also plays for Essendon.
Oh,
there we go.
So he got rubbed out, and we didn't have Michael Christian in this week, because we spoke to him, the Match Review Tribunal
officer.
Man,
yep.
And he was obviously put him up, and he got 4 weeks, and this led to Wayne Carey saying he'll never watch football again if he gets rubbed out, because it was a just spontaneous incidental incident, but it hit him in the head. And what I'm asking you is, that then Lee Matthews said that this would be a classic case for the send-off rule being adopted. Now, seriously, once we
that's start, absolutely changing the game. If they bring that in,
and then how open to rorting the system is that an umpire can say, oh no, well I think you better go off for an incident that they mightn't even be guilty of if you just review
it. Sending off permanently or a sin bin arrangement?
I think a sin bin arrangement. Mm. Yeah, because what happens is your injured player on the other side is now they're down to
17 on players. The field, yeah.
They want to even it up. So
this led to the great Doug Hawkins, who was in here last week, who announced on this very podcast, "You Cannot Be Serious," that if he was the coach of an AFL side, he would instruct his charges not to bump. And I said, "You're joking, aren't you, Doug? You wouldn't ask your players to bump." He said, "No, it's fraught with danger." And I see Channel 9 picked him up yesterday and asked him the same question, so we could have given them the answer, Channel 9, without them sending a camera out to Doug. We could have said, listen to the podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
Self-praise being no recommendation.
Well, exactly. Now, I wonder, this is just moving along.
Yeah. And of which direction we never know where you're moving along to.
Well, have a look at his notes. Well,
he's got notes, but he tells us no prep.
No, don't bring any notes. No.
Well, hang on a minute. I'm happy not to bring any of these in, but I worked with a man over there for 4 years who's not here anymore.
Yes.
And I said, have you got any topics to talk about? He said, no. Right. So if he didn't have any topics and I didn't... we wouldn't be on air.
Right, fair enough.
But you're much
I think
more.
The best one was when Don brought in a postage stamp and he had his topics written down.
He did. He actually had his will
and testament written on the back.
So these aren't topics necessarily, but I was watching, in fact, I'll get it on the phone. I'll read out the headline, Greg, because this is right up your alley. Mm. Here it is here. This was on the news in over. It says former Price is Right producer says the show had protocol in place if contestant peed their pants when they got excited.
Is that
now
right?
That was a serious news. I'm asking you, Greg, leading up the world's greatest quiz shows, and just mention the two of them, please.
Well, perfect match, of course.
And the other one, didn't Nine ask you to do one?
Oh, well, I did several. There was Say G'day and
The
other one. I can't remember. I've hosted 14 television shows.
Was there any ever protocol in place by the producers so that when you ask them a question, they're about to win a car or a refrigerator, they pissed themselves and they had to be taken off stage just to clean themselves up? Or they said, if you get excited, for God's sake, don't shit yourself. No, you don't
there
remember.
There was no protocol, I'm sure.
No, so that sounded like a beat-up. Surely that would be
a beat-up.
Well, it was on the news, and we have to be right.
Would it have been Ian Turpey or Larry Emder?
No, this is in America.
Oh, in America?
Yeah.
That explains it. The land of incontinence.
But I do remember once on Perfect Match we played a little game. You know, the couple had come back and they were telling us what happened, Ivan, at the Tangalooma Island Resort when we sent them away for their naughty weekend to the Gold Coast and brought them back and asked them how much fun they had and how many times they had it. And they said, well, when we were up there, we played this ping pong ball game. And so he stands up with his legs apart and she gets a ping pong ball and she puts the ping pong ball and she's got to get it up the left leg, across the top
You've seen that game.
So that was quite funny because she was putting it up the left leg and you should have seen what was coming down the right leg.
I've seen that.
So that's the only time I can recall.
I don't know about you, Ivan, but I had a sheltered upbringing by the sound of things.
Yeah, I did.
What is this game? No.
Play it at Mary Jig one night with Donna when you play.
Yeah.
When you've been to the barbecue.
How about a snort?
Do things often...
Oh, God.
Do things often stagger you in a life? Now, you bring any topic you like up, but these are the things that fascinate me. I was watching the Webb Telescope, which is the biggest telescope ever built, and it was launched into space. Mm. 1 million miles it went out from Earth to try and photograph the birth of the universe. I know this sounds ridiculous.
I love all this stuff.
I do. You watch it when you get home. I'll tell you where to watch it.
Thank you.
And it took them 10 years to build it and $7 billion to build the bloody thing. And it didn't fit in the rocket, so they had to fold it up. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is, fold it up, and it was a monumental work of just seriously how humans could work this out is beyond me. And they launched it up, and it opened out, and it said that when it got up and running, they had images, wait for this, they had images of the, not the birth of the universe, they had images that it captured on its big screen from 700 million light years away. 700 million light years. Now, I'm telling you how far light travels in a second. Light travels 187,000 miles in a second. I want you to try and digest how far 700 million light years.
I didn't realise we were coming to the 1% club.
And I thought that is no one. Now, how could you quantify that?
The bloke I love watching, which we do watch.
Well, it does occur to me that if God created the world, he must be very old.
This is a Melbourne supporter, you see.
Or now, she.
But Brian, what's his name? Brian, what's his name? The astrophysicist bloke who does those documentaries.
Yep, Cox. Brian Cox.
Oh. Yeah. He used to be a rock singer.
C-O-X.
He is unbelievable because he actually explains things, Ivan, that Greg and I and even Sam, could understand.
In layman's terms.
And he was asked, how long has the Earth got left?
Oh.
And the scenario he painted was pretty grim. That one day the sun will swallow the Earth.
That's correct. Yep.
And it's going to be 225 million years away.
That's right. And
I'm sitting there.
225 million years away. Okay.
I nearly tished myself because I thought, hang on, how longer have we got left?
Brian Cox said. Brian Cox, he's a star, Brian Cox.
Oh, he's
Brian
fantastic.
Cox said if you hold a grain of sand up, the Earth is in the scale, if you hold a grain of sand up, the Earth is part of the universe in a scale from here to Fiji.
Shoo.
That's how big the universe is.
How do they work this stuff out? That's what's got me. And so this telescopy thingy that went up opened out, was it like a flower calyx opening?
It was.
Yes.
More a Venus flytrap.
So the reason I bring this up is because this was in the... This is news, Greg, and everyone. For a period of... This is yesterday. Yep. For a period of time, different parts of the globe, the moon will be almost perfectly aligned with the sun and the Earth, causing the outer edge of the Earth's shadow, known as the penumbra, to be cast onto the growing orb. Would you rush out to the backyard and have a look at the growing orb being shadowed? Who would work that out, and why would you put that on the? Why would that be a news item?
We were out for dinner the other night, Monday night.
Who's we?
Donna and I.
Oh, Ryan. Okay.
With some dear friends around the corner.
Yes.
And it was the lunar eclipse thing.
Oh yeah.
And you know how great it is up there because you're not far away.
Yes.
How great it is up there when there's a lunar eclipse or any lunar event happens. Yes. In the clear skies of the high country. And it is magnificent.
It is marvellous. Now, I'm just trying to now create a segue, right?
This is good.
Have you ever heard of the Noonamah Moonies?
I can honestly say.
Would you have a guess what a Noonamah Moonie is?
It's somebody from South Korea who follows a cult leader.
Thank you very much, Craig. Sam, a Noonamah Moonie, what might that be?
Could be a drink.
Yeah, good. And Ivan?
Yeah, some local tribe.
Ivan's closest. Has anyone here, put your hand up because it's radio, has anyone here been on the GAN, the train that goes from Darwin?
The GAN.
The GAN.
The GAN,
Named after the Afghan camel...
That's people. Right. Afghan.
Afghan.
Or do you say Afghan?
Well, no.
I go to a private school.
It's called the GAN.
You call it the GAN. You're right.
So the GAN, named after the Afghans.
Yeah, I now know who they are.
Here's the point that I'm trying to make. It's just celebrated its 20 years since its first arrival to Darwin. It got to Alice Springs and then they rebuilt the track up to Darwin. And when the first train, 20 years ago, just last week, got to Darwin, the Noonamah Moonies were there bearing their bum as the train went past Noonamah, which is a suburb. And so consequently, the passengers that were on the train got to see
got mooned. Yes, he's right.
Don't you think that was a good segue into the moon that you were talking about and the eclipse that Craig was talking about?
Greg, I've known you for 40 years. That is just the biggest load of crap that I've ever heard.
Hence the song, it's not the pale moon that excites me.
Or bad moon rising. But anyway, the good, fact...
No, Evans, well done. Big tick there.
What, for the segue or the moon?
No, finding out they're called Noonamah Moonies.
So the first train got to Darwin 20 years ago.
Have you ever been on the GAN?
I haven't.
They said it's the most boring trip you can ever go on. You sit in a fucking cabin for 2.5 days and just see nothing but tumbleweeds and dirt.
Except for the Noonamah Moonies.
Yeah, that would be... I reckon they've put them out there just to excite the...
you cannot be serious. Travellers. Brought to you by the Northern Territory Tourism Association.
They do this. The Moonies come out every 10 years, that's all. And so they were there for the first GAN 20 years ago, Ivan.
Right.
John Howard was on that train. He was Prime Minister. And
no wonder they
moved. So he saw the Moonies.
So he saw the Moonies. And and then 10 years later, they came out again. And the other week, it was 20 years. So they won't be back again until 2034, the Moonies. But
I can't imagine what some of the rear ends will look like in another 20 years.
Be a full moon then.
It's saggy.
Anyway, I thought you would be interested. No, that the Noonamah Moonies bear their bums every 10 years to the GAN.
Now, we interviewed on here... on You Cannot Be Serious about a month ago, a bank robber who spent...
A couple of months ago?
Bank robber who spent 20 years, 25 years in jail called Mansour. What's his name?
Russell.
Russell Mansour. Yep. He left us. He died. I think someone said he took an overdose. The only reason I'm bringing this up is that... last week we mentioned a man jumped out of fell out of a hot air balloon.
Yeah, in Preston. In Preston.
It was over Preston, was it?
Yeah.
And apparently we speculated at the time. We said, how in the hell could you fall out of a balloon? So he committed suicide. How would you like to have been standing next to that and see that happen?
They had vision from the gondola, as it's called.
Yeah, they do. That's right.
The basket, but it's the gondola, of the unfortunate gentleman at the time. His face was blacked out, as it was. Which is another point. Remind me to come back to that. It was terribly sad. I do a program called Great Australian Lives. And next Sunday, Easter Sunday, my guest is the CEO of Lifeline, a man you will remember, Colin Seary.
Yep.
Lovely fellow. But we talk about the issue of, on a serious note, of suicide. Lifeline has 41 centres around Australia. They have about 11,000 volunteers, 3,500 support workers, and they take over 4,500 calls a day in this country. And when I said to him, COVID, enormous need for the Lifeline. Now it's the cost of living, where people are really, really struggling out there, and that this has upped the number of calls. So he's just been away on a little break because he said he has to be here for Easter because, again, it's a time of very high demand.
Mm.
It was very eye-opening having a chat with him about this and some of the sad statistics in relation to it. A lot in the farming community, Greg,
yep.
that we heard about. And recently, someone I know, their son-in-law, who seemed to have everything in this world, took his own life. And we can't understand it because we're not of that bent, put it that way. But Yeah, it sounds they like this poor fellow had had enough, and the balloon was one way he saw of a way out.
They don't highlight it, though, do they?
No, they don't.
There's obviously people that potentially jump off the bridges and things like that, but they don't.
Copycat reasons. Coming over the Balti Bridge, Donna noted it. That she's run over the bridge doing those, you know, runs things you do when she does all that physical exercise.
No, Donna does.
Yeah.
She runs over the bridge.
She's run over the bridge. On those charity run days, you know, run for the kids and run for mum and all that, which
when
is great.
When you said run over, I remember the days you got run over. Run over the bridge.
But she doesn't remember the suicide barriers being on the Balti Bridge.
That's right. For? Why were they why were they erected?
Well, because they erected them on the Westgate Bridge.
Yes, as a result of...
Of people... You know,
no, as a result of... We had Tim Watson Munro in here. We were discussing a criminal psychologist, and that was put... Yes, that's he conceded that he was a recidivist drug taker. But he did concede that. We didn't have to concede it because it was public knowledge. But he said that that was erected because the man, I can't think of his name, threw his child, stopped his car on the bridge and threw his child over the bridge.
God. Yep.
Remember that,
And that's why they put
the barriers
that up.
So that's a serious topic.
Another segue, not a very good one this time, but you raised death. Or you did,
yes.
About the man and the balloon. We lost a colleague a little while back in Mike McColl Jones. Yes, nothing to do with suicide, but Mike, you knew Mike Craig. What are your memories? Mike McColl Jones, well, yeah, but Mike was a comedy writer.
Yep.
Wonderful man, lovely man. Great. Grew up with television, sat beside Graham Kennedy in the 50s and... has written several books, and you can see some of the raw scripts of Mike trying to, you know.
Did he write for you ever?
Yes, he did, on several occasions at several radio stations. Yeah. And so, in other words, I was doing breakfast on Gold FM with Dermot Brereton, as a matter of fact. Yep. And you'd get to the radio station at 5:30 in the morning, and then along had come a fax in those days from Mike McColl Jones with some topics, you know.
Topics?
One-liners about topical news.
Something to explore.
That's right, like that. Yes. So anyway, God bless Mike, but he passed away. But
I'll tell you a story which I found out.
Can I just finish this?
Yes.
In typical Mike McColl Jones fashion, a week after he died, I got an email from him.
Ah, that's what I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah.
Same as he did for Graham Kennedy, I like that. Remember?
And so, Ivan, what he's done is here's the email, and it's come and it's gone to Dear Greg and Sue, just a note from afar, presuming he sent this from heaven, to say how much I've enjoyed your company over the last X years. Greg, we do go back a long way. I vividly remember you, Greg, driving home after a lunch with Norm Spencer when you were working at 3MP. From memory, you had your legs wrapped around the steering wheel. Ah, those were the days. Signed me. Now, only a very funny man could have written this before he passed away. And as I understand it, Mike sent out 250 of them to various people, and they're all personal.
And so,
did you get one?
No. So I don't think I really knew Mike.
Okay.
But this will sound a really naive question. So he got someone to press send when he died.
His son, Tim.
I see. Well, that is extraordinarily clever.
I was going to tell you the story too.
So if you were going to write an email to me before you passed, what would you write?
This is the email.
What would you say in an
people
email?
People often say, what would you like on your gravestone? If what I'd like is if I was on my gravestone, very small writing, so you had to peer down and you look down and it would say, fuck off.
Right, seeing as you're reading personal emails, Ash Long, who's an old mate of mine, sent this. This is one from Mike, sent to Ash.
Oh, right.
The top five comments from the world's first newspaper column sent from far away.
Oh, yes.
5, I knew they'd get me. A bloody departure tax. 4, the format is simple. They give you a ticket with a number. You take a seat and wait for someone whose voice sounds suspiciously like Craig Willis. He calls the number out. Don't worry, Craig. They tell me you've got years left down there.
Nice.
Three, everyone's wearing a sign, Dan not wanted anywhere. Two, Optus not available. One is blank. Mike McColl Jones, OAM.
Oh.
And I would like to sincerely thank the original custodians of this magnificent land, Adam and Eve. So Ash sent me that. That's what I was going to say.
Mike. Oh,
I didn't know you got one, but he sent me that just to say, look, he did remember you, which was lovely. But yeah, his son was sending them out.
And of course, the great
brilliant
Spike Milligan, I think, not apocryphal, this is true, apparently had on his grave, I told you I was sick.
Which is actually
not right.
No, sadly. I interviewed Spike Milligan
once. Well, that is apocryphal.
It is apocryphal, but it's a great story. I interviewed Spike Milligan once Canberra.
Mickey Rooney had on his grave, I tried.
I like that.
How many wives did he
have? Nine. Of his own?
I tried.
Interviewing Spike Milligan, I'm only a young kid in Canberra, 2CA, and he's got a copy of the Australian newspaper. And all during the interview, he hardly looked at me, but he was diddling. You know, he was a great sketcher of things.
Doodler.
Yeah, that's the word. Thank you. And I do remember...
Doodles at the same time.
I saw him at the Canberra Theatre. His opening line was, policemen are numbered in case they get lost. So he doodled on this front page of the Australian newspaper. And I thought, I'm going to keep that because that's a Spike Milligan original doodle.
Yes.
And I went out to get a cup of coffee and I came back in and the cleaner had been in.
Oh, really?
And I didn't realise it was in the bin out the back going into the truck. And I thought, that was a Spike Milligan original doodle.
Now,
what would it be worth?
What we normally do is Ben Fordham, the great Dr. Ben Fordham, he rings in and
where does the doctorate come from?
Well, that's a good question because he came on when Don Scott was here. He said he'd like to... He thought Don was so obscure and so remote and so eccentric that he thought that he was playing us on a break. He'd had us all fooled and he said he'd ring in and be Don's psychoanalyst. So we named Dr. Ben Fordham, MD, Managing Don. And he now is called religiously up in Sydney, Dr. Ben. People ring in and say, hello, doctor. So he's going to ring in later, shortly.
Yes.
Which makes no difference because no one knows what time we're recording this. But what we normally do, and as if you might have people, Greg, that listen to you and say, oh, I listen to the podcast.
I've had that this week.
And then they say, well, you should say to them, give us your name, we'll give you a shout out.
Can I do that?
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, it's David Peel and Liz Peel. Now, David Peel used to be the marketing manager of the Melbourne Football Club, going back some years, but I've considered one of the best marketing managers. And they listen in Rosebud religiously.
Yep. Well, people spring in the street and say, love the podcast, and by the time you write their names down, if you've got something to write...
Do you have a list there? Do you want to do the A to Z of the Melbourne phone book? Or
I could do them in alphabetical order of the ones that I can remember.
Yeah.
Do you want me to do that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Right, Adams, Anglis, Bainbridge, Belcher, Bennett, Bingley, Black, Blazey, Carter, Chambers, Chaney,
the Geelong phone.
Continue. Coleman, Corbett, Cox, Cunningham, Davidson, Davey. So Doug Hawkins has Michael Christian Menswear, not the Michael Christian from the AFL. Yeah. Michael Christian Menswear manufactures our apparel, which has the baseball caps that has apparel. You cannot be serious, and this shirt that I'm wearing, you cannot be serious.
Do you play golf in that shirt?
I do, indeed.
Is Doug a monthly?
Pardon me?
Does Doug come on regularly?
Hawkins? Mm. Yes, he comes in every other month.
That's
you
good.
Come in one that's and we have we had Heidi Victoria. I don't know where she's got to. She's on next month, next week, I think.
Heidi.
Heidi Victoria. Heidi Ho. And So Doug is extremely popular. We should read out some of the comments that people write in on Facebook, and I don't know how it works, but... 99% of them are complimentary, but the other 1% give us buggery and, you know, say you're an old tool in your
That's the 1% he's going to read
But we don't want to encourage people to
write... That's the 1% club.
We don't want to encourage people to give us a bagging just because they want to get their name read out, but some of them are good. Mm. Some of them are saying, oh, Fossil, you should be in the home by now and all that sort of stuff. It's good, but... Doug is extremely... I've never heard anyone dislike what
He's
Doug
terrific
does.
Terrific bloke, Doug.
And so Michael Christian, in a marketing... just a stroke of marketing genius, he is now putting the Doug Hawkins memorial caps out. Not memorial, he's not dead. But he's putting the You Cannot Be Serious with Doug Hawkins' number. I think Doug was number 7 for Footscray.
He was, yep, 7.
He is the games record holder for the... Footscray Football Club when they were the VFL.
Right.
When they became the AFL, the man who surpassed him is the bloke from...
Brad Johnson.
Thank you. Well done, Ivan.
The smiling assassin.
Anyhow, so Michael Christian is marketing the Doug Hawkins You Cannot Be Serious with number 7 on it and his name on the back, and he'll sign them. And he lets them go for the extraordinarily low tariff. You wouldn't believe how cheaply he lets these baseball caps go for.
How much?
$69.
What? Gee. There'd be a kickback to number 7. You're going to believe it?
No, I don't think that's right.
What a load of manure.
That's not right, is it?
Fucking oath. He said he said,
sorry.
Doug Hawkins signed caps with numbers available for $69 plus delivery will be available
plus
on the
delivery.
So
it's a bit cheap, I would have thought.
$69. Gee whiz. You can buy 40 of those, I reckon, from... So they will... If you want to order a Doug Hawkins You Cannot Be Serious cap, and Michael Christian Menswear can take orders for them.
Beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Now, I don't have a segue, but I do have something that I did want to talk about.
Is this your word of the day, segue, is it?
Because you never know where show's going to go, just got to try and roll one into the other.
I thought the segue was one of those things you rode.
It is.
Go on, Greg.
This is an exercise in hospitality and the way the younger generation perhaps thinks, and I don't want to put them down or anything, but this happened to me the other week and I thought this is just ridiculous. Mm. I was at Milawa. Milawa is where Brown Brothers is. I wasn't at the Vineyard, Ivan. I wasn't imbibing in any... alcohol. It was at the Milawa Bakery.
Very popular.
Oh, you'd know the Milawa.
I know it
Bakery.
Very well. Very popular.
You know where I'm talking about, Sam?
I do. Milawa.
So I go in to the Milawa Bakery, right? Yeah. And Sue, my wife, is with me, and now she only eats sausage rolls, right? That's all she eats. And no, that's not all she eats, but what I mean is when you go into a bakery. So, and I was trying to avoid a pie, and I had David and Liz with me. I had Robin Jolly with me, the singer. Remember Robin?
I do.
Marshall's portable music machine. Yeah. So Robin's gone up, and he's got a coffee scroll wrapped in Glad wrap, and his wife, Lee, said you should never buy a coffee scroll wrapped in Glad wrap at a bakery because it's likely to be stale.
And it'll sweat.
Stale. He's opened it up and because we sat down at a table, he went over and he said, can I have some butter? She said, we don't sell butter. Oh, but you're a bakery and you've just given me a cup. Can I have some butter? No, we don't have butter. Can I have a knife to cut the thing? No, there's wooden spoons on the table, but we don't supply knives. Right. Could you go out the back and get me one? All right. Out the back went the girl. And when she opened the door to the kitchen, I saw the chef, the bakery chef, right? And he's a very big man.
Yep.
And he had a tray full of sausage rolls. And they were on this tray like a pyramid. They were fresh out of the oven, beautiful sausage
Did
rolls.
Did Sue headbutt them?
At the Milawa Bakery. And so Robin Jolly has finished his stale thing. We've had our coffee. And just as we were leaving, Sue said, well, I haven't had anything to eat. I said, well, I just saw him. He's got a big tray of sausage rolls. Go and get one as we leave. And she went over, and you know those warmers with the glass front where you can see? There were no sausage rolls in there.
Not one.
Not one. And Sue said, just about to leave, could I please have a sausage roll? And the girl said, this is the whole point of what I'm trying to say.
Yes,
and the girl said,
looking forward to it.
We don't put the sausage rolls in the warm until all the pies have been sold.
Well,
that's a good business.
It's a good rap for the Miller Bakery.
Well, it's true.
I mean, I know.
That is bullshit. It's typical of the way things are done. Now, Don and I have been away.
Is this a segue?
It's a segue. Talking about hospitality, don't let her near the microphone because she'll just go completely off her tree. Go and get with Donna, who works in hospitality, is a nightmare. I actually booked two tables. She sits over there. I sit there. We go to a nice restaurant in Port Macquarie, New South Wales. We've had a week off, right? It's got big wraps, this joint. So we go there. Her wine glass is dirty. So she says, excuse me, could I get a clean wine glass? That's fine. One of the staff is standing in the middle of the restaurant combing her hair like this. She sees the chef cough into her hand. Not her elbow, her hand. So, and Donna is a pescatarian, as you know, Greg. Mm. Pescatarian. So I order a Wagyu steak, right? And she orders wild mushroom and spinach risotto. Mm. So the dish finally arrives. There's a couple behind us have had no service whatsoever and they're going to get antsy. So the steak and oh, sorry, the other quick thing was she ordered some bread and it said with rosemary and something butter. The butter was frozen.
Oh, she sat there
with a knife going, anyway. These girls are wandering around. Half the staff disappeared. Anyway, her main course arrives, and it was, to her description, pedestrian. Like they hadn't really cooked the mushrooms. They just throw them into the rice and everything. But there was no spinach. Oh. So when we went to pay, I said to the young girl, look, I'm sorry. Could I just mention, when you appetise a wild mushroom and spinach risotto, not a bad idea to put some spinach in it. She said, I'm sorry. So they took a glass of wine off the bill. I'm sorry. And I got in the car and I said, right, we've given that joy to life. We'll never be back. But, I mean, this is the way, and Donna's right. The young kids these days are never taught how to handle that situation.
Well, someone has told that young girl to say that, and so that's a rule at the bakery. Maybe it was the big bakery chef
at a restaurant view, the Millewa Bakery, and where were you?
Sales at Port Macquarie.
Sales at Port Macquarie. Yeah,
both given life by the sound of it.
All right, well, that's fantastic. So we'll be back with Dr. Ben, MD, and until then, au revoir. Night. I'm worried because